they could hardly wait to get their triggers loaded. When the airplanes hitting the towers exploded, you should have seen them on the color TV. It was the first big war of the 21st century. The planes were still burning and they already had their man. They said that he was hiding in the mountains of Afghanistan. We asked to see the evidence, they said they couldn't show. This is war, they said, and that's all you need to know. America, you're scaring me, you're making me ashamed. You're going out for blood, and I can't let you do it. Not in my American name.
Welcome to Global Community Forum, a show that takes a look behind the scenes at people around the world working for peace, justice, and the betterment of humankind. I'm Scott Gurian. On today's show...
All I know is that anger and hatred will only breed more terrorist attacks. I want to feel safe. I want my children to be safe. I want my family to be safe. I want everyone, everywhere, to be safe.
We'll hear from Amber Amundson, who lost her husband, Craig Scott Amundson, in the terrorist attack on the Pentagon on September 11th. She spent the last 6 months traveling across the United States, speaking out under the theme that her grief is not a cry for war. All that and more on today's program. Stay tuned.
America, you're scaring me, you're making me ashamed. You're going out for blood, and I can't let you do it. Not in my American name.
March 11th, 2002 was the 6 month anniversary of the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center in New York City and the Pentagon just outside of Washington, D.C. April 7th marks 6 months since the start of the United States' war against terrorism, a military endeavor that has no indications of ending anytime soon. Recent reports have suggested that the Bush administration could extend its war to Iraq, Somalia, Colombia, the Philippines, and a host of other regions around the world in the near future. Meanwhile, in Afghanistan alone, the number of civilian deaths is estimated to have surpassed the number of Americans killed on September 11th by several thousand. This, according to independent research conducted by University of New Hampshire professor Mark Herold. Recent reports in the French publication Le Monde Diplomatique appear to indicate that American military forces have dropped unprecedented quantities of depleted uranium bombs across Afghanistan. DU munitions are low-level nuclear-grade weapons. They have been linked in the past to outbreaks of radiation poisoning, cancer, and a litany of toxic health hazards in Iraq, Kosovo, and Vieques, Puerto Rico. Their effects are thought to last for several generations, poisoning the air and water supplies of vast civilian populations and leading to birth defects, learning disabilities in children, and a variety of radiation-related illnesses. A growing peace movement in America and around the world has warned that the United States is contributing to a cycle of violence that will fuel further anti-American resentment and more terrorist acts. They say that the U.S. should seek non-military solutions to the problem of terrorism. This was also the message of several dozen peace activists and relatives of September 11th victims who took part in a week-long Walk for Healing and Peace last November. In their journey from Washington, D.C. to New York City, they advocated for a nonviolent resolution to the conflict in Afghanistan and sought to demonstrate that not all Americans are united in their calls for revenge. Among the peace walkers were Barry and Ryan Amundson, whose brother Craig Scott Amundson was killed while working at the Pentagon, and Amber, Craig's widow. We start today's show with Amber Amundson, reading a letter she wrote to American President George W. Bush shortly after the attacks.
Dear President Bush, my name is Amber Amundson. I'm a 28-year-old single mother of two small children. The reason I am a single mother is because my husband was murdered on September 11th while working under your direction. My husband, Craig Scott Amundson, was an active duty multimedia illustrator for your Deputy Chief of Staff of Personnel Command, who was also killed. I am not doing well. I am hurt that the U.S. is moving forward in such a violent manner. I do not hold you responsible for my husband's death, but I do believe you have a responsibility to listen to me. Please hear my pain. I do not like unnecessary death. I do not want anyone to use my husband's death to perpetuate violence. So, Mr. President, when you say that vengeance is needed so that the victims of 9/11 do not die in vain, could you please excuse Craig Scott Amundsen from your list of victims used to justify further attacks? I do not want my children to grow up thinking that the reason so many people died following the September 11th attack was because of their father's death. I want to show them a world where we love and not hate, where we forgive and not seek out vengeance. Please, Mr. Bush, help me honor my husband. He drove to the Pentagon with a visualized world peace bumper sticker on his car every morning. He raised our children to understand humanity and not to fight to get what you want. When we buried my husband, an American flag was laid over his casket. My children believe the American flag represents their dad. Please let that representation be one of love, peace, and forgiveness. I'm begging you, for the sake of humanity and my children, to stop killing. Please find a nonviolent way to bring justice to the world. Sincerely, Amber Amundsen.
Amber Amundsen reading a letter she wrote to President Bush after September 11th. In the rest of today's program, we'll have a chance to meet Amber and hear her story. She'll describe things from her point of view, what the loss of her husband meant to her, how her life has changed, and what she makes of America's military response.
My name is Amber Amundsen, and my husband, Craig Amundsen, was killed at the Pentagon on September 11th. Personally, for myself, the military force and the military action going on in Afghanistan is frightening and not comforting.
Can you maybe describe Craig and your memories of him?
Craig was an active duty multimedia illustrator for the Deputy Chief of Staff of Personnel Command at the Pentagon, who was also killed. Craig had an idea about the military and how it could create a more peaceful global community. In fact, he drove to work every day with a visualized world peace bumper sticker on his car and was very well received within his office. Craig was an incredible person and a wonderful father. We have two small children. The thing I remember most about Craig's personality is his ability to really love people without preoccupation. And I think I've learned a lot from that, and I really want to find a place in my life where I can experience more of that purity.
If you could just, as you've done a few times before, talk about the date of September 11th and what happened on that day and how you found out.
Okay. On September 11th, I began the day like most other days. I walked our son Elliot to school and came back and began to work in the flower garden with our daughter Charlotte. The phone rang and I answered it. It was Craig, and he called to tell me that the first plane had crashed into the World Trade Center. He thought that maybe it may have been a malfunction with the engine, and we weren't really sure about it. And he said he would keep me posted as he gained any information. We said, "I love you," to each other and let each other go. And I went back to planting flowers and caring for flowers with Charlotte. And about 10 minutes later, the phone rang again, and it was Craig. This time, he sounded a bit more frantic and told me that a second plane had crashed into the World Trade Center. And we were both very sad, but felt a sense of security. And I felt safe and Craig felt safe. And we said goodbye to each other, again saying, I love you. I felt compelled to go up into our home and turn on the TV. And at that time, I saw that the Pentagon had also been hit by an airplane. I immediately tried to call Craig and was unable to reach him. And the day progressed with no news from Craig. And into the evening, I still had not heard from him. And the next day, again, still not hearing from him. It's those last moments together on the phone that really do give me a bit of comfort, because I know that Craig was content and felt safe. There's a bit of hope in that, a bit of hope, because I don't think he realized that we were being so harshly attacked, and I'm thankful for that.
What do you think Craig would say or think if he was here now about the response to those attacks and the push for military action and war?
I believe that Craig would be as scared as I am about the retaliation and military efforts going on in Afghanistan, particularly because he really believed that military force and bombing just continues to foster hatred that we have seen in other areas of the world. I believe what we're doing in Afghanistan is going to perpetuate violence here in America. I know that Craig would not be comfortable with the military and their actions. And I know that because he believed first in exhausting all other ways of bringing justice before retaliation. And I don't feel that we're doing that. I don't think we're exploring international law. I don't think we're exploring ways to have diplomacy. I think we're acting impulsively and unnecessarily. I mean, I think we're moving too quickly, and in the process, we are hurting families in Afghanistan. And I know from a witness that was recently in Afghanistan that there are women and children and families that are being killed every day because of the bombs that are being dropped. So I think we need to take a look at the long-lasting effects of military force in Afghanistan.
Do you think that the president and other politicians are using the death of Craig and people like him to justify what they're doing?
I do, and that's most disgusting to me, because I feel like I've heard the angry rhetoric from the national leaders that, you know, we cannot let the people of September 11th die in vain. And how can, you know, killing and creating more conflict and fostering that hatred, how can that give any honor to the people that died on that day? I think what would really be a comfort for my family and myself would be to find a way other than what happened to us on September 11th to deal with this.
Talk about this, I guess, sort of complex mix of emotions that you must have gone through, first mourning and then maybe anger, and then I guess, if I'm understanding you right, just sort of a conclusion or some sort of sense of reconciliation, sort of taking steps past all of this.
I can certainly understand the anger that is felt by the American people, and I am definitely angry, and I do believe that there needs to be action. The way I deal with that, though, is looking at what's going on as an issue, and it's not so much the Al-Qaeda or the Taliban that is the problem as it is the issues and the reason why those individuals are doing what they're doing. So I think when I get angry and I feel like it's too much and too painful, I just remind myself that hurting and taking out troops is not going to take away the issue. There was enough hatred on that day to have suicide attacks here in America. I feel in terms of a resolution, we really need to pull all of our resources that we have and really look to international, law, and look at we are being supported by the world in this, and I think looking to them for options other than a violent attack on Afghanistan is really important.
How did you make this transformation from sort of the mourning stage into sort of taking action and feeling the need to speak out?
Well, it was almost instantly that I really accepted that Craig was not coming home, that I immediately had a concern for women in our country that would be dealing with what I'm dealing with and losing the father of their child. I then began to think about what is happening there, and I didn't want women there to be going through what I was going through because of what happened to Craig. And so in the mourning phase, which is everlasting, but during the beginning of that, I had a real concern for anyone, anywhere, who would have to feel the way that my family was feeling. And it was difficult because as I started to speak out, I realized that there was a lot of opposition to the things that I was saying. And when I would say that I didn't want another woman anywhere in the world to feel that way, and I certainly wouldn't want to be part of that, people were really confused. So then I felt a need to clarify what I was saying and really be public with it. I felt really an urgency because almost immediately, I think October 9th, we began bombing. And as soon as that happened, I realized that I looked around me and saw the people within my family and my community that supported me and that really believed in what I was saying and felt the same way. I realized we needed to move forward and become a voice and really let the American people know that there are family members that do not want vengeance. On the October 11th National Memorial Service for the Pentagon victims, it was very clear to me that our leaders were not able to provide a memorial and a remembrance. It was about retaliation, and I could understand what they were saying. They thought they were comforting the families, that we will wipe them out. In fact, they said, we will smoke them out of their holes. And I realized then how important it was for me to contact those leaders and let them know that I was not comfortable and not comforted by their angry words.
Do you think that it took courage for you to come forward and speak out, especially, I guess, in the atmosphere and political climate that's developed where everyone's sort of unified for some sort of military action?
I guess I really was oblivious to the fact that there was so much opposition. And so in terms of courage, it just felt natural to me, and it was something I had to do, and I had to speak out. And I've been told that it's a courageous act, but I just feel that my motivation is our children, and I can't continue to create a life for them without doing something about what is going on. And the only way I can bring peace to my children, my family, and honor Craig is to continue to speak the words that he would have. I made a promise to him that I would continue for the rest of my life to speak out against war and retaliation, and it feels good to do that, and it's really the only thing I can do right now. And without doing that, I don't think I could even move forward at all.
What about the sense of, I guess, being a minority in this political climate, knowing that there's just sort of a few voices like your own?
I agree that there are, that I certainly am in the minority. But what I'm finding throughout this walk and communication I have outside of this, that there are a lot of people that are questioning what's going on, that are starting to realize that, you know, there are more than just the two options of war and doing nothing. And the more dialogue I have, I realize that with time, people are really starting to question and talk about other ways that we can deal with this. I'm not scared because I know I have a supportive community around me, and I have, you know, the motivation of my children. So I know that that I can continue to move forward with this.
Do you get the sense that as the widow of someone who was killed, that people generally lend you more credibility when you speak out for peace?
Yeah, I do. I think that particularly being a military spouse, you know, they're open to listen to me because my husband was part of the military. I also believe that people are intrigued and maybe confused and really want to hear what I have to say because they're expecting me to be angry and expecting me to fully support the military. And I think it's really intriguing for people to hear that I am not comfortable with what is going on and that I'm not afraid to speak about it. And if that means speaking about it on a, you know, highly political level with national leaders, it's something I'm willing to do. And I think people are really interested in that, even if they don't necessarily agree with it. There's an interest and a curiosity and a state of confusion that lends itself to dialogue and media attraction. And so, I mean, I feel as though I have a responsibility to be that voice because people are so sensitive to my situation.
Does that generally tend to be the response? Just people are intrigued, or are they generally receptive to what you're trying to say? Or I guess you encounter a lot of opposition as well?
I had not really encountered a lot of opposition until entering the New York area. And it was almost immediately when we came into town, the look on the faces of the people was so devastating. And I didn't feel a separation, but I could see in their face that they certainly felt a separation, like they have no idea what we are going through here. And so it's easy for them to preach peace, and they just don't know. And so I felt a need to speak directly with people who were outwardly criticizing what we were doing. And it was at times really difficult because people were very angry with me, really confused and couldn't understand. But when I spoke of Afghanistan and the children in Afghanistan and the man that I knew that has been there since the September 11th attacks and the pictures he brought back from Afghanistan that children had created, and he had given those to me as a thank you and said that the children thank you. And it was as if the people had not considered the people in Afghanistan as families and communities like we have here. And so when I was able to present that and present the statistics that, you know, Afghanistan has a 20% mortality rate, you know, children, there are the what is called invisible refugees that really have nowhere to go and no nutrition whatsoever. When you present that to people, it's an eye-opener.
A lot of people who support this particular war and military action, you know, when they encounter people who are speaking for peace, they say, well, tell that to the relatives of the victims. Have you ever encountered that and then turned around and said, well, I am?
I have encountered that, and there have been opportunities where I've turned around and said, no, I'm sorry, but there are family members who are grieving, and reminding them that our grief is not a cry for war. And it is surprising and confusing, and you can see the confusion in their face when they realize that not all family members are comfortable with what's going on right now. When there's opposition and a person finds out that I have lost someone, there's an instant connection that happens, and it's a really beautiful thing. It really does lend itself to communication and gives a unity that, you know, we are all at a loss and the whole country is mourning, and you and I both have lost family members and feel differently, but we all are connected with in our grief, and so we're able to speak about it and able to respect each other in that way and oftentimes learn from each other. And that's been very powerful for me. I see the confused looks on the faces of the people who find out that my husband was killed. And it's hopeful to me because that confusion is oftentimes diminished when I'm able to tell them my story and tell them how I feel, and that's so hopeful for me. I realize that a lot of the confusion lies in the lack of understanding and knowledge of family members that are not comfortable with the attacks in Afghanistan. And it's reassuring to me because the more I can speak out, the more my family is able to talk about how we feel, the more support we gain and understanding, and the more people are aware that not all families want to move forward and with military force, the more awareness there is. And I feel that it's that very awareness that will make change, that will create change within foreign policy. And I'm very hopeful about that. Every day, more family members come on board. And it's just tremendous, and I'm hopeful. I think there are a lot of people out there that now have permission to speak out against this war, and the more comfortable we become with dialogue within America and just discussing it and realize that it's not anti-American to say no to this. It doesn't mean you don't love your country or the people who were killed. For me personally, it means that you truly do care and that you truly do want to see the United States be in a safe situation. And people are amazed when you talk about other options and talk about the cycle of violence and that, you know, the more we continue to strike, the more chance there is that there's going to be a strike back against us. And I think that's overwhelming for some people because they feel like the military is going to take care of this and that we can just sit back and let that happen. Again, it's taking us away from the issue and the reason why September 11th happened. And I can't pretend to know all the answers to why that happened. That's why I'm asking national leaders and the military and people around me that have been part of international affairs and have been in other countries and witnessed
the effects of economic sanctions or military force. I'm asking them to dialogue, to pull all of that knowledge and all of our resources and all of the support we have, pull all of that together and discover creatively other ways, because how do we know that this is the best way to deal with it when we haven't even discussed it? We haven't talked about it. It's just become immediate. We've handed over this crisis to our government and have not had a voice in this at all, and that's disturbing to me.
That's Amber Amundson, whose husband Craig Scott Amundson was killed in the terrorist attack on the Pentagon in the United States on September 11th. Stay tuned for more of the interview after this.